We're doing a review of Binyan HaBayit, our classes. And we began the class discussing how Ish v'Isha together make the Jewish home. They are a Bayit. Bayit means Bet Kibul, potential for blessing. And we began with the famous Gemara that a man together with his wife, that is the Adam, the concept of Adam, a human being in his highest form, begins only when a man is married, Ish v'Isha, and that is the source for bracha, Torah, etc. Shoroi b'lo Isha, shoroi b'lo bracha, b'lo tova, b'lo choma, b'lo Torah, etc. One who is without a wife doesn't have good, doesn't have blessing, doesn't have Torah, doesn't have a wall, doesn't have security, doesn't have a... The source of much of the blessings for a man is his wife. And we began with discussing the foundations of the Jewish home. We said one of the foundations is going to be ahava, love. And we said that in the concept of love, we have to stress what the verse says, achati yonati tamati, my beloved one is single, she is the only one. We always must stress the fact that she is the one and only, there's no one else. And we can always express our love, and we should always express our love. Love is not something that's contained to the bedroom, but rather it should be expressed at all times, in every way that's possible. And we expanded on that, that even when the couple are forbidden and they're not allowed to touch, etc., there are ways that they are permitted to and must show their love to one another. We discussed that there are two forms of love, as the Navi describes the love between the Jewish people and Hashem. There's Ahavat Olam and Ahavah Rabbah. There is an eternal love that is the foundation for the relationship, and then there is a love that swells and becomes great, and then it ebbs like the tide. That is normal. It is normal that both should exist in a marriage. One, there should be a foundation of love that is always there. And two, there is love that gets stronger and weakens. And that's normal, that there are ups and downs in life. Like everything in life, there are ups and downs in the feelings that couples feel for one another. And people have to know that that is normal. And it's not only normal to have a down for a day or a week or a month. Couples also go through downs of years. There are difficult years in people's lives, and sometimes the relationship suffers as well. We try to undo it. We try to shorten the downs and expand the ups. But at the end of the day, a person shouldn't be scared, even if there's a period of years where there's a down. We discussed the importance of never saying the word get in the house. That, one of the most fundamental feelings that a wife and a husband need in a marriage is the feeling of security in the marriage itself. And that the mere insinuation that there is a thought that this marriage could come to a close is one of the worst threats you could ever give a marriage. And we mentioned the story about the couple who were married for many, many years and had many, many children, even married off some children, and he once insinuated that they might get divorced, and she took it so to heart that years later, they got divorced, and the foundation for that divorce was the fact that he once insinuated it, and she couldn't stand it. We said that Pasuk tells us, God says, "Ve'lishech teshukatech," that God creates the marriage in a fashion that the woman always needs to feel her husband loves her, and that's part of the way the relationship is built. They both have to express love, and she has a very strong need to be told time and again. One can never tell his wife enough that he adores her and loves her. And the worst pain that a man can give a woman is to show her that he's thinking of someone else or that he doesn't adore her the most in the world. And the greatest feeling he could give her is to let her know that he adores her and there are none that come close to her. Our sages said, "En isha mitkana ela beyerech haverta." A woman is most jealous of another woman. The Gemara in Ksubis records a person whose wife made, one of the Amoraim, whose wife made him miserable. And the Gemara says, but he always tried to make her happy. And the Gemara says, an example of how he always tried to make her happy is wherever he'd go, he'd bring her a small gift. And we mentioned the importance of that, showing the wife that one is always thinking of her. That even if one is at Sheva Brachas and they're throwing candies, he brings her a candy from an Ofraf or something like that. That's worth a lot to a woman, because that shows her, I was there and I thought of you. The Gemara also tells us the story of Yalta. They were benching, and she was accustomed to the fact that when they benched, she would get part of the cup from benching. And the guest said, "No, you don't really have to give it to her. It's enough that you drink from it." And she got very upset. She went and dashed many, many barrels of wine in the attic. The Gemara says one of the Amoraim's wives, her name was Yalta. And we see that she got very upset. What, she needed that cup of wine? No, it was what that cup of wine represented. We mentioned that one of the foundations of marriage is honor, mutual respect. Our sages tell us, "Mechabda yoter migufo." One has to honor his wife more than himself. If one has a limited income and one of them is going to get a new suit for the yomtiv, then all things being equal, she comes first. We expanded that one may not make jokes at a wife's expense, and the contrary, one must see to it, praise her, and praise her in her presence, and praise her in other people's presence. And we said that honoring one's wife includes outside the bedroom and in the bedroom as well. And we said that honoring a wife also includes that if one has to make a comment, then he for sure does not do it in front of other people. That's an Isra Doraisa. What heter is there to embarrass her? She's no different than anyone else. We said that people sometimes have to be reminded that a wife is not less than your classmate. That sometimes we say, it's true, you have to honor her much more. But at worst, she's not less than the next guy. The next guy you wouldn't embarrass in front of other people, certainly you can't embarrass her. We discussed that one should have the perspective that one's wife is the source of the Shechina in the home. That Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was once seen entering his house and fixing his clothing, and the student said, "Oh, you have an important guest. I'm sorry, I won't come in." So he said, "Well, the important guest is the Shechina. I'm coming to my wife. So the Shechina's here." Ordinarily, people come home, their shirt is tucked out, their tie is half off. It's true, a person wants to feel at home, but a person also has to respect the fact that he's coming home to his wife, and there's what to be said for people who dress up for one another. Just like a husband wants his wife to dress up for him, so a husband should think of his wife also. Maybe it's better if he walks in with the tie straight and then takes it off. Maybe it's better if he takes a minute before he walks in, and he walks in, she looks at her husband, what's he been like all day? She looks, oh, he's a schlaf, that's how he's been walking around all day. Or maybe he's walking in, oh, he's set up, oh, that's my husband. Afterwards, you take off the tie, you kick back, but still, you want to walk home and see your wife covered with all the kids' food, and chances are she will be. She won't have a chance to do otherwise. But one of the instructions we always give girls is try to beautify yourself for when your husband comes home, not only for when you go out to chasanas and stuff like that. Well, the same thing is true for the husband. We said that one of the basic needs that everyone has in a marriage is appreciation. And we said that that is a thirst that is insatiable. A person always thirsts for appreciation, and we said that most women feel that they are not appreciated. The husbands always have 100 expectations from their wives, and we have to know that there are two different rules, there are two different directions that we get. One is for when we're dating. Go listen to the 10 hours of dating classes we have. And the other one is for when we're married. When we're married, our sages told us that our perspective has to be Dayenu, it's enough, Shem Gadlot et Banenu LeTorah, that they bring up our children to learn Torah, Umatzilot Otanu Me'achet. And by the fact that we're married, they save us from sin. It's easier for a person to be a pure person when he's married. That's it. It doesn't say you can expect your wife to do 1,000 other things, even though the Mishnah in Ksubas enumerates what are the wife's obligations. But nonetheless, a person has to know, is she doing the minimum? Is she bringing up the kids? She's feeding them? She's bringing them up to be Jews? Is she being a wife? Anything beyond that, you have to consider a plus. It doesn't mean that the wives who are listening to this can say, "Hey, honey, don't expect me to do dishes, don't expect me to do laundry." The Mishnah says it's one of the obligations of the wives to do the laundry, etc. But when it comes to a husband's expectations, he has to appreciate everything. And we have to recognize that ordinarily we aren't appreciating our wives enough. I don't think there's a husband who could say, "I have enough appreciation for my wife." So that's something everyone has to work on. The greater a person is, the greater he knows how to express appreciation, and the greater his appreciation of other people is. Every person could appreciate his wife more, as we see from Avram, that the angels asked Avram, your wife? They knew where she was. They wanted to point out to him, "Avram, where's your wife?" And he'll say, "Oh, she's a modest woman. She's in the tent." They want to remind him how modest and how pious Sarah was. Avram didn't appreciate Sarah. For sure Avram appreciated Sarah. But the angels were trying to make Avram love her even more. And we see that even a man of Avram's stature could appreciate his wife more. Certainly every one of us. And we have to express our appreciation with speech. We mentioned the story about the wife who comes to the judge and says, "I want a divorce." And he says, "Why?" And she says, "Well, we've been married 20 years and he never told me he loves me. He never told me he likes my cooking. He never tells me anything." So the judge tells the husband, "Well, The husband says, well, when we got married, the first day I told her I loved her. The first day I told her her cooking was great, and it hasn't changed since, so why should I say anything? We said, it doesn't work that way. But our nature is that it does work that way. Our nature is that we get used to things. If the Torah tells us that Adam Arishon's great sin was kfui tovai, he didn't have enough appreciation for his wife, we have to understand there's a message in that for all of us. That our natural tendency is going to be kfuyei tova, not to appreciate all the good that our wives give us. And therefore we have to work on that and show appreciation in our speech. We said another fundamental need in a marriage is autonomy. And we discussed the difference between men and women and the need for intimacy versus autonomy. We said there are two contradictory needs that every person needs in every relationship. One is intimacy. We want to feel close. That's why we develop a relationship. And one is autonomy. We want to maintain our own autonomy. I am myself. I am my own being. And we discussed that men have a greater need for autonomy and women have a greater need for intimacy. And sometimes these needs are conflicting. So we have to know how to maintain our needs and also forego some of our needs to give for their needs. We also have to recognize that we also need intimacy. Men are so busy protecting their autonomy, sometimes they forget that they also need intimacy. It's very common that a man doesn't share with his wife what happened that day because he's scared of her questions, and she's going to ask 100 questions about details he doesn't want to tell her. And then she's going to have opinions about 10 things that he doesn't want to hear her opinion, so he feels it's better not to tell her anything. And that's not good. There are many couples where that's how the conversation goes. He's reading the newspaper, she's talking, yeah, honey, yeah, honey. What was that? Yeah, sure, honey, 100%. Yeah, sure, yeah. Then they never spoke.
I told you 5 times in the breakfast.
Right? Doesn't work that way. We have to value this time that we speak with our wives, and we discuss the difference between men and women, and that men use speech as a tool. Speech is there to get a point across. I want to tell you something, I tell you, end of story. And for women, speech is a tool for intimacy. It's a way of getting close. And that's why women have a lot of small talk. They could have small talk for 3 hours, and you're wondering, what do they want to tell me? They don't want to tell you anything, they just want to talk to you. And that's a way of getting close. And we have to value that and appreciate it. And we went to the whole long story about the wife that comes home and tells her husband, you won't believe what happened today. I went to the store. When I went to the store, I met this friend. And the friend, we were walking down the aisle, and we saw this girl who used to live in our neighborhood, and she had this tremendous earring. My husband's listening, yeah. And there were tomatoes on sale. You remember, I thought last week they were cheap. This week they were even cheaper. Yeah. Well, as we were walking by the tomatoes, my cell phone rang, and the girl called from school. And you won't believe what happened in school today. But anyways, I was walking with this friend who I hadn't seen for years. And then we saw this other friend who was wearing this dress. You remember, I bought the dress so cheap, and I thought it was the only dress of its kind in this country, and she has the exact same dress. Well, we were walking down the aisle, and etc. We went through 100 different details that she tells the whole long story, but tonight we don't have time. And we said, what's the idea? You're sitting there wondering what's the point, and there is no point. The point is she wants to talk to you. And all of you guys are laughing, but every one of you that will be married will experience this. So when you experience it, remember she's telling you, I love you and want to talk to you. And that's a very good thing. So don't look for the point. And if you want, you could steer the conversation to things that do have a point. If there are things you want to talk about, all she wants is to be with you. So that's a good thing, but you have to value it. We said that when there's a fight, so the first thing that happens is men want their cave. Give me my autonomy back. Okay, we'll talk later. Enough. We've been getting on one another's nerves. Let's talk later. And the woman, the first thing she wants is intimacy. Let's see that we're close again. And he says, what do you mean? We got on one another's nerves enough. What do we have to be together now? And she says, speak to me like that. After everything you did, now you want to walk off alone again? Now you're going to leave me? So it's conflicting needs. He needs his autonomy. She needs her intimacy. He needs his space, and she needs the confirmation that they're still together. So you have to know how to be a gentleman and forgo what you need, and you have to know how to balance what you need with what she needs. We said one of the fundamental needs in marriage is truth, to be honest with one another. And we mentioned that women's concept of truth is different than men's concept of truth, something which we see time and again in Tanakh, and we see time and again in every history book and in every folklore that you read. We mentioned that women have a need to be partners in everything, and it's not uncommon for a woman to see her husband in the middle of a phone conversation and start asking him details about who he's talking to and what he's talking about, and he's wondering, what does she want? She wants to stop who I'm talking to and talk to her. And the answer is, to an extent she does, and to an extent she wants to know what's going on. She wants to be part of your life and everything. You have to see the positive in that. There are many couples who you could see them yelling at one another. I'm on the phone. Can't you see I'm on the phone? Well, you should appreciate that. That's normal, and that she wants to be part of your life and everything. Now, not everything we discussed here is going to be in every home, but most of it is probably going to be in every home. Everything that we mentioned here are things that we have to strive for. We have to be prepared for the fact that every home is going to have issues that they have to work on. And there are homes where the wife isn't truthful. There are homes where the wife spends money. There are homes where the wife gets angry and yells and breaks dishes. There are homes where the husband is unreliable. There are homes where the husband spends money. Every home has its issues. Everything we mentioned here are things that we have to work on and strive, and they are important to be there. We have to work on having them in the home. We have to be aware that if we find that we don't have them in the beginning in our home, that doesn't mean our home is doomed. That only means that's one more thing that we will have to work on in our home. Yes?
You said the concept of truth and truth is different from man and women.
Correct.
How different?
Refer to that class, the second or third class. If we go into each point in detail, we won't.
Some of them covering, most of them be less.
Right, that's one which will take too much time. We discussed the importance of basic respect and basic politeness between couples. Sometimes you see a couple that they're so infatuated with love, they don't give one another basic respect. You should worry about that couple, because a couple that truly loves one another will give true respect and will be truly polite to one another. True love is not at the expense of respect and politeness. Saying please, saying thank you. That people want to strive for holy homes, and people should strive for holy homes, but people should know that that is the husband's responsibility. The wife, to an extent, is like the moon. The moon reflects the sun's sunlight. Well, the wife is going to be a reflection of you. If you want holiness in the home, you have to try and bring it in. You have the responsibility to uplift the house. We also have to know that success doesn't come in a day. You have to be prepared to build and fix and build, and it's something that everyone has to learn how to do. That's why we're having this class. But at the end of the day, nothing builds like experience. You want to know how to build a holy home, you'll learn with time. We discussed that people have to know that a good wife is a wife that's fit for me, not the perfect wife. The perfect wife for me is not going to be perfect, because I'm not perfect. If I were the perfect guy, then the perfect wife would be my wife. Sometimes I ask guys, what are you looking for? When they're dating, they say, oh, you know me. I'm like everyone else. I want the perfect wife. I'm thinking, yeah, well, if that's what you want, then A, I don't know her. I might know who the perfect wife for you is, not the perfect wife. And B, I don't think you're the perfect guy, so it's not for you. No one's a perfect guy. No one's perfected himself. Everyone has what to work on, and our wives, when we see that they're not perfect, that shouldn't bother us. We're not perfect either, and if they were perfect, then they wouldn't be for us. Whenever a person wants to criticize or say something negative, he should ask himself, how strongly have I expressed my love? Have I expressed it as strongly as I'm about to express my criticism? Well, if I haven't, then I should think about the balance in life. How much love does she deserve? How much appreciation does she deserve? Obviously, much more than what I feel right now I need to comment about. And if I haven't expressed that as strongly, then I have no right to express the criticism. No one wants to be criticized. There's a story about women who were given the task to, they were in a group for self-betterment, and each wife was told, go home and ask your husband to give you a list of how many of the things that you need to improve yourself on. And every wife came home and asked her husband, and one wife, her husband said, I gotta think about it, I'll give you a list tomorrow. And the next day she got a bouquet of roses, and there were 10 roses, and on each rose it says, "There's nothing, you're perfect, I love you the way you are." And every woman came back to the class very upset, except for this woman. No woman wants to be criticized, even a woman that asks you to criticize her. No person wants to be criticized. Don't think us men are any different. The best way, if you want a person to change, is to strengthen the positive, not to try and do away with the negative. You see that your wife does something not the way you want it, try to catch the times when she does it the way you want it, and then compliment her on that. And every person likes compliments. That's the best way to get a person to change. Compliment the positive, and that in and of itself, the negative will fall by the wayside. Couples have to think together which friends should be in the home. If the girl once had a boyfriend or if the guy once had a girlfriend, then obviously those people have to be distanced. They don't have room in the marriage. When we do kiruv, when we try to help befriend other people for their benefits, that's very, very nice, but we have to remember to maintain tznius. There were couples where when the wife was dating, she would consult with me, and then when she was dating the guy that it started getting serious with, at some point I would always tell the girl, "Do me a favor, from now on it looks like it's getting serious. Unless you must, please do not call. From now, looks like you're going to marry this guy, right? So from now on you have to look up to him. You two will find a different rabbi. I don't belong in your home. In your home, whoever your husband's rabbi, that's the one who's supposed to be the rabbi. And you have to get accustomed to building a relationship with him and not having a relationship with any other person. Until now, it was necessary for whatever it was necessary. And obviously, we always try to limit it to exactly what's necessary and not a sentence beyond that. But even that, at this point, you should be with your wife, with your husband. God willing, he'll be your husband. And with him, you'll find whoever your rabbi is. And it shouldn't be me. And I think that's very important. Even in the realm of rabbis, you could say, "Oh, it's only a rabbi. I mean, it should be a totally different relationship, and everything's very nice." That's true, and it is a different relationship, hopefully. But you know what? I prefer doing it that way. And I'm a guy who doesn't. I won't talk to a girl if my wife isn't there and the door's open. And I could count on one hand the amount of times that I've agreed to talk to a girl in the home. Almost always, it's on the phone. And even so, I think that it's better that way, but don't expect your wives' rabbis to tell them that. I don't know if anyone else that does. Usually they feel like there are 500 girls who are calling me, so what's the difference? There's another one. But I don't feel comfortable with it. At any rate, you have to be careful with which friends you bring home. If there's a cousin or whatever that you feel you're too friendly with and she's a girl, then it's your responsibility to distance that relationship. And the same thing is her responsibility. We have a responsibility. Abraham would bring the men close and Sarah the women. And it's not our job to bring women close. A husband has to know that his responsibility is to show his wife that his relationship is only with her and no other women. There aren't any other women in his life. And the wife has a responsibility to show that to her husband, and we shouldn't give room for any other thoughts or feelings. People sometimes are in school and they have to do homework. So they're accustomed to usually the four persons from. So the most normal thing is that you do homework with a girl. You do homework with a classmate. Who cares if it's a boy or a girl? Well, that's not acceptable once a person is from. And all the more so once a person is building a Jewish home. No wife is to be expected to put up with that. We said that the same thing is true when it comes to children. People have a right and a responsibility to watch who their children play with. And we said that when it comes to compromising, every couple is going to have to compromise. We try to strive to find a spouse where there will be no compromises on fundamental issues, but it is almost 100% guaranteed that there will be some areas of fundamental issues where you will have to compromise somewhat. I'm not saying anyone should search for that lechatzila, but you have to be prepared for the fact that after you're married, you can't be prepared for everything, and that does happen. And then you have to think, on which points are you willing to compromise and on which points not. We discussed the relationship with one's in-laws and the importance to develop that relationship on the one hand and to keep it at bay on the other hand, not to let them be too much a part of the lives. And that if there are three points that most couples have issues with. It's money, how to allocate money. It's parents, either parents, his parents or her parents, and intimacy. Those are the three main points that couples have serious issues over and might end up getting divorced over. That's why on the one hand, we have to respect our in-laws, and we have to try and develop that relationship, as we discussed, to compliment them and to express to our own parents the attributes and values of our wives. And whenever our wife says something positive about our parents, to tell them that. Whenever our parents say something positive about our wife, to tell her that. And to admit all the negative. And to agree with our wives that she does the same. She doesn't have to hear if my wife thinks she has no taste in clothing. If my parents think she has no taste in clothing. And my parents don't have to hear that she thinks my mother makes the terrible food. I'm not saying any of this is true. I'm just saying as an example. What?
It's a good example.
No, these are things that happen every day. You hear couples that these are issues. You have to be smart and filter out what you tell. You have to make sure not only not to tell the negative, but to remember the positive and to tell it over. That will strengthen the relationship. We discussed that a couple has to choose together which Rav they will go with, and you have to make sure that there's a Rav that the woman feels comfortable with. Obviously, you also have to feel comfortable with them, but remember that she also has to feel comfortable with him, because she's going to be implementing these halachas, and most things apply to her more than they do to you. The kosher kitchen and then Bri Chomra, all these things. No, I'm not saying you don't have to keep halacha. Just meant that at the end of the day, most of the questions that couples ask, if the Rav is going to give a more stringent answer, then she's the one that's going to bite the bullet. So that's why it's all the more important that it's a rabbi that she feels comfortable with.
With respect to what kind of question?
Most questions. Kashrus in the kitchen. Who's the one that does the shopping? Most of the time it's her. Who's the one that does the cooking? Most of the time it's her. Who's the one that's going to have to check for bugs in the food? Most of the time it's her. As helpful as you will be, then the day it's her. Chinuch with children, most of the time it's her. Laws of family purity, most of the work is her. So most of the questions that come up when you're married, if it's going to be a stringent answer, the burden of the answer is going to fall on her. So she has to feel comfortable with whichever rabbi you choose. You also have to feel comfortable, but remember that she has to feel comfortable. We said that there are times that you have to put your foot down. They have to be few and far between. But there are times when a husband has to say, I live here too, and I will not be able to go with. And you have to choose your battles. Choose very, very well. we discussed how we bring up a topic that we disagree on. If there's something that we have to discuss, let's say a husband notices that there's something that he does have to make mention of, something that his wife has to work on, so he said, firstly, it has to be at a time when we are most close, obviously when the couple is not forbidden. Secondly, we said husband has to think in advance how to compliment before he does that, and preferably compliment in the same area. Thirdly, we said when the husband brings it up, he should bring it up as a one-time occurrence, not as, look, this happened here and here and here and here and here, because if he keeps pointing out that it happened all over us, at the end of the day, she'll say, okay, that's the way I am, you married me, you're stuck with me. So you want to bring it up as, you know, it happened that we were once discussing this and you mentioned this, and when you mentioned it, afterwards it seemed to me like it wasn't exactly accurate what you told me. Let's say the issue he's bringing up is that 15 times in the last week she's been untruthful, so you shouldn't say, 15 times you said this and it wasn't like that, you said this and it wasn't like that, how can I count on you? That's not going to get him anywhere. If you want to work and make it work, so the trick is to mention it like a one-time occurrence, and mention it when things are lovey-dovey, when things are dafka close. Mention it after you've complimented her, shown her how much you appreciate her, and say, by the way, there was, remember, when this and this happened, I wasn't sure exactly how to understand that X or Y, and you mention it. And then you have to think together, you have to be prepared with quite a few solutions, because it's not enough just to say there's a problem. If you're smart enough to mention the problem, you have to be smart enough to mention quite a few options of how to work on it and try to work on it together. And the second you see a slight improvement, you have to compliment a lot. And it's best if you show how you yourself have faults and you agree that if there's a major fault that you keep getting on her nerves on, you work on it together, because that way, every time she doesn't succeed, you'll have 15 times that you didn't succeed too. And you'll have an easier time not getting upset when you see her not succeed, when you see you don't succeed. Because it's very easy to look at a trait and say, change that, it's just wrong. And to forget that we don't succeed every Rosh Hashanah, chances are we stand with the same list in our hands. Because it's very rare that a person succeeds in changing a trait. So before we have expectations of someone else, we should have expectations of ourselves. And in order to remind ourselves of that and to make it a more balanced relationship, it's always good to say, you know what? I know you've been asking me 15 times now, whatever it is. If I promise you I'll be home on time, to be home on time. And I've never done it. So obviously I'm having trouble with this. I'm going to work on this at the same time you work on that. And let's see, let's work together. You'll help me, I'll help you, and we'll see how we make headway, and we'll work together. And don't forget, the second you see a slight improvement, to compliment no end. We said that marriage represents a general uplifting experience, and that people can look at marriage as a springboard and try to jump forward, to leap forward. People shouldn't have fantasies, but on the other hand, you are starting a new life, and there are many changes which you can make. Don't forget, this is the first time you will be married to this woman, and God willing, for your whole life you're going to be married to her. So you can start fresh. People can turn a new leaf on many, many, many fronts. And that doesn't mean that when you're dating, you could ignore your history and who you are till today and say, tomorrow I'll turn a new leaf. But that does mean that once you've gotten engaged, you should think very, very clearly and closely what are the things that are truly important to you and how you are going to be the best possible person once you get married. And you should know that many, many, many people, and not only in Machon Meir, in Merkaz Harav, and anywhere you go, people have thought it through before they've gotten married, and people were able to change their lives completely. And it's possible. Don't expect that you won't have downfalls, and don't think it's going to be easy. But there is an element where it is much easier because you are starting fresh. And a person can make drastic changes in their life and should. It's an excellent time, and it's an ideal time. We said that enemy number one of the engagement period and the first years of marriage is the thought, maybe she wasn't the right one. We said that that's a thought that plagues almost every couple, almost every man in the beginning of marriage, and many men can never shake that thought free. And a person has to be man enough to do mind over matter and take that thought out of his mind. You have to control your thoughts. It is the most natural thought in the world that after you get married, and you suddenly start discovering after a day, a week, a month, a half a year, at some point you start discovering who you married. Some people start the morning after. Some people start a year after. But at some point you will be shocked. And at that point, it's natural to think, hey, do I really have to put up with this? Did I really marry the right person? Maybe there's someone better out there. Or even if not, this is tough. Yeah, that's normal. It is tough. You're building the most precious thing in the world. If you think it's going to be easy, then you're kidding yourself. It's normal that it's going to be tough. And it's normal that when you're in close proximity with someone, that there are things that are going to be difficult. And a person has to know that every couple that's going to be honest with you has had these thoughts. There's no such thing as a couple under the sun, and I don't care how beautiful you think they are, that hasn't had these thoughts. Is this right? And every couple has the responsibility to take those thoughts out of their mind, and God forbid to say it, as we discussed, that ever mentioning something to allude to the thought of maybe getting divorced is like taking out a gun. And we discussed that the more accidents happen with gun where innocent people get hurt when people take out a gun as a threat. You never, ever, ever mention that. We said that that's the one time when I would say a husband should get upset if the wife says a joke or something that even infers the idea that they might get separated or, God forbid, divorced. That's when a husband should say, no, please do not even joke about it. And the stronger he reacts and says, please do not even joke about it, the more his wife will be appreciative. Because what he's in essence telling her is, you are so precious to me and this relationship is so precious to me, please do not even joke about ending it. We discussed that the concept of ahava stems from the word hav, which is netina, which is giving. And we said that Rav Salant always used to tell Hasanim that giving her the physical is for you spiritual. Don't think, oh, what kind of physical person she is. No, the physical giving that you give for you is spirituality. The fact that you've given her is a spiritual thing for you. And every person has to know to give according to what the receiver needs, not according to what the giver needs. The natural tendency of every person is to think, what would I like? Oh, so that's what I like. Probably that's what they like. That's normal. It's a mistake. Men and women are different. We have to learn our wives and learn what they appreciate. We discussed that the basis for a good marriage is mutual respect. And even a couple that can be called not a good couple, a couple that theoretically doesn't match, if they honor one another, they will be successful. I know a couple that the wife was married against her will. This goes back 60, 70 years. She came home one day and her parents had cake and wine on the table. And she asked, what's that? So they said, go get your Shabbos clothing. And she said, why? And they said, mazal tov, you're a kala. She said, really? To who? And they said, we'll introduce you in a little bit. And she went up and she got her Shabbos clothing and she came down and met her chassan. And she went back up and started crying. And she told her parents, no. And they said, yes. And she ran away from home the next night. That night, she ran away from home. And they chased after her and they caught her. And she got married to that person. And I heard the story 50 years later, 50, 60 years later. And she told me, you know, I don't want to be married to him. I never wanted to be married to him. But they have mutual respect. And to this day, they're married. And they have great grandchildren already. And they were able to make it work because they have mutual respect. Even a couple that you'd think, this is the worst couple in the world. She still today says she doesn't want to be married to him. Behind his back, but she still says it. Right. Yeah.
But in that way, you can say, it can work with everybody.
That's true. At the end of the day, every marriage can work. I wouldn't tell anyone to get married that way. I'm not saying every marriage is going to be the most joyous marriage. Chazal taught us not that way. Chazal taught us not that way. Chazal said that you should see a woman and you should that because you're not supposed to hate a Jew, so you have to know your wife enough so that you won't end up hating her. But at the end of the day, every marriage could work. That's exactly what we just said. Yes, you don't get married out of that ideal. We said in the introduction to this class. This class is for post-marriage. We're giving it pre-marriage because you might not end up here post-marriage. This is preparation, but it's true. There's no such thing as a couple that can't make it work other than a couple that can't respect one another. If they don't respect one another, they can't make it work. Now, Rav Aviner said this in different formats, and other rabbis have said it in different formats, and then many people got married based upon this philosophy, and then got divorced because they couldn't honor one another. They didn't live up to this, and that's why Rav Aviner edited a book that he printed. One of his books on marriage, he wrote this concept, and then he took it out because he saw that people who were single were misunderstanding it, and they said, okay, I could get married, it'll work. And they got married, and it didn't work, and they got divorced. No, we're talking about a level that isn't easy to attain, but a level that is everyone's responsibility to attain. If a couple gets divorced, it's because they couldn't do this. Everything else is difficult, but if you can respect one another, then you can manage. And not only can manage, at the end, when you, it'll be a success. But it develops into success, because the truth is that every marriage goes through a cycle where it reaches a point that the spouses feel like nothing here works. Every marriage reaches that point. And at that point, the couple has to decide, we're going to make it work and we will respect one another's wishes even though everything else doesn't seem to work. And from there is where successful marriages evolve. There's no successful marriage, in my opinion, that hasn't hit that point. And I know a lot of what you'd call successful marriages. But if you speak to people privately, you'll hear that they've all hit that point. So every couple has to know that's the point of test. And that's the point where you stick it out through that, then it grows from there. That's where you start learning how to make a successful marriage. So it's true that at those seconds and in those days and those months and possibly even those years, no couple feels, hey, we're a successful marriage. But it grows into a successful marriage from there. From there, it will evolve into a successful marriage. And if, God forbid, the couple does not force themselves to respect one another, then it declines. Now, you'll read this in different books, depending on what the book is. You'll read this described as a different stage. Psychologists will say people who grew up in a culture that stresses the importance of marriage and that that divorce is considered a shame, they have a longer success rate of marriage because they stick it out through this point. Every textbook that you'll read will describe it differently, and you'll read Hashkafa books, so they'll say the glue of marriage is the belief we have to be together and that Hashem made us for one another. And however you want to describe it, at the end of the day, if you decide this has to work, and we will respect one another at least as much as we can, and from there it evolves, so then it grows into a successful marriage. And no one has a right to say, I can't do it, because we began the first class with the story of the first class was the day Ephraim ben Avram had his brit. And I told you guys that on that day, we had sat together at a coffee shop after his brit, and the kid walked in with his father, and we offered him some ragalach. And he said, no, my father's getting you ragalach. And I asked the boy, you know why your father's getting you ragalach? Because he loves you. And the kid, the 70-year-old boy, says, no, my parents are divorced. And I thought about that all the way through the class, thinking, boy, that's how he says. He says, no, my parents are divorced. Meaning, I say he loves you, and he says no, and his perception is if they're divorced, he doesn't love me. So we discussed that marriage is an obligation not only to the spouse and to the Jewish people, but to the children as well. And I told you the story about how I once had a kid in a class, and I taught a class for kids, and an 11-year-old kid came to me after the first class. I'd always ask them, tell me, are there any details I should know about you? And the kid comes to me and tells me, I'm divorced. I'm thinking to myself, how's an 11-year-old boy divorced? And then he corrected himself and said, no, my parents are divorced. And we said that's how kids view it. When parents get divorced, they've really divorced the kids. So a kid can't be divorced, but he means his heart is all mixed up, and his feelings and his emotions, and parents have an obligation to make it work, if not for themselves, then for their kids. And no parent can say, no, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it means I don't care enough about anyone else but myself. That's what I couldn't do it means. I can't judge anyone else. I'm not coming to judge anyone that gets divorced, but every person has a responsibility to make it work. We said that in their relationship with one's in-laws, it's very important not to try to find allies. Sometimes a husband feels like he has to convince his wife, so he feels he'll get his in-laws to be on his side, and that's a way to convince his wife. That's improper. Husbands always have to be a unit, be it towards the in-laws, be it to the outside world, be it to the children. The greatest contradiction a couple can give the children is when the father says this and the mother says that. Because in a child's mind, Abba's always right and Ima's always right. So if Abba's always right and Ima's always right, then how could Abba be saying yes and Ima be saying no? Smart couple never contradict one another. They'll consult with one another. The father could say, I don't know, I have to ask the mother. The mother could say, I don't know, ask your father. If the mother says, ask the father could say yes. But a smart couple will balance that. I don't know if you guys noticed. Very often when you guys come to us for Shabbos, my son's going to ask for a cookie. And my wife will say, ask your father. So sometimes I'll say yes, and sometimes I'll ask my wife to say yes. So she has a reason why she doesn't want to say yes. But the reason I don't want to be the one to say yes is because I can't be the fun guy who always comes home and says, yes, you could have a cookie. He can't have this perspective that my wife was with him all day, so she can't let him have cookies all day. So she's the bad guy. She always says no. And I'm the fun guy. I come home, I say, yeah, you could have a cookie. Can't work that way. So you have to balance it. Sometimes I have to be the guy who says no. Sometimes she has to be the one who says no. But that's a balance that it can't be that I said yes and she said no. Could be that I said ask her. Could be that she said ask me. But it's a balance that a couple have to run. He said that that's part of the honor that couples owe one another, to honor what she says in front of the kids. What? Yeah? Correct?
In Poland, for example, if you want to show respect to a woman, you let her go first. And if you're walking first, you're showing big disrespect.
So a couple could walk side by side, no?
Yeah.
So for sure you should let her go first. There are ways of showing honor. If a woman expects honor in a certain way, then you have to figure out how to give it to her in that way. You could hold the chair for your wife. You could, whatever honor she expects in that area. about letting her go first, so hopefully you can explain to her that in halacha, one of the ways we show respect for a woman is not walking behind her and watching her figure move. We respect her as a person, and therefore we try to de-stress her physical attributes, even though we appreciate them, and every husband has to know to show his appreciation for that, and every wife wants to hear that her husband feels she's the most beautiful person in the world physically, not only spiritually. Couples have to know to express that as well. After they're married, but we don't stress that, and definitely not outside. And one of the ways of showing her honor is walking at her side. But that doesn't mean you won't hold the door for her. You could enter and hold the door after that. You, when you get into a car, you could go and hold her door first. There are ways of showing her that honor without her walking in front of you necessarily. And try to figure out those ways. People sometimes ask me, if you're dating in a society where if you don't hold the door for her, it's improper. So you could hold the door and not walk in directly after. But you should know that many from girls will feel very awkward if you hold the door for them. You have to make sure that that's really what she's expecting. We discussed the example of if Bill Gates came and offered you a partnership, how much you'd be preparing for it. And we said that in marriage we're having a partnership which is much greater than a partnership with Bill Gates. It's a partnership with Hashem. The Shekhinah comes and rests between a couple, and we said that one should prepare for it. There are many good svarim out there. Prepare. We discussed how the external world stresses the physical in marriage, and we said that there's no such thing as a joyous marriage that is physical. Physical is a tool. It is a wonderful tool that God gave us for expressing the spiritual. But so long as it is a tool and not the stress of the marriage, it's an important part of the marriage. A couple has to be careful. The husband has to find favor in his wife's eyes, and she has to find favor in his eyes, and they have to try to ensure, even after 10 pregnancies, and after she's 35 years old, to try and find favor in one another's eyes. And when you're chasanim, you learn halachas that discuss how we try to ensure that. But there are things that we discuss about how a couple are together in the bedroom that are meant to ensure that it will continue to be an exciting experience for both of them 20 years down the road as well. But we have to remember that all of that is a tool. And the spiritual is what should be the connection between the couple. And when I say spiritual, I don't mean you have to sit down and learn Ramchal together, or even learn Parsha together. And we discussed that many excellent couples are not good chavrusas. They can't learn together. When we discuss a spiritual connection between a couple, we have to remember, they say Rabbi Akiva Eger's wife couldn't read Hebrew. And she wasn't the only one. A spiritual connection is the source of the connection between the couple and what their aspirations are and what they're trying to do by building a Jewish home together. It doesn't mean that they learn sfarim together. You're not marrying a chavrusa. Now, we got halfway through our classes. You guys will have to decide now. Let's take a vote whether you want next Sunday to continue our review or the first class next semester. So let's take a vote.